But I ask myself, what is the common factor? What is the thing that is common to all of these situations? I wonder if you can guess. Looking back over all of my memories that I brought back, what's the common factor? Well, cue the cheesy stock image. It's the social interaction. It's playing with other people. Every single one of my memories is of playing with other people. I have zero memories of being stuck in a practice room playing on my own or even performing a recital or a concert on my own. It wasn't about that for me, although it may be for you and for some of your students. But really, what was important was the social aspect. And why is this crucial? Well, of course, we're social beings. We love being together. We're made to share experiences with other people. It's more fun, isn't it? Hi, listeners, it's Tim. And today's title is What's the Secret to Building a Lifelong Connection to Music? If I asked you that question, what would you be thinking about? What instantly comes to mind? Is it having a great teacher? Is it playing fabulous repertoire? Is it getting lots of treats and stickers and money for doing your practice? What is it that is the secret to a lifelong connection to music? Well, in today's episode, we're going to be sharing with you the presentation that I gave at Nicola Canton's Teacher Turbo Boost event this year, titled Why Playing with Others Helped Me Play for Life. And in this, we're going to unpack one of the key factors, I believe, that contributes to students forming a lifelong habit and love of music. So we're going to go straight in and have a listen to the recording. Let's go. Hey there, Turbo Boost teachers. It's Tim here from Top Music, and I'm delighted to spend some time with you today. Thank you very much to Nicola. I hope the conference has been going well. I've always enjoyed this initiative of the kind of short segments, so I've got to make sure I don't talk too much. And we get straight into today's topic, which is all about helping students play for life. Our mission at Top Music is to support teachers around the world to be the best teachers they can possibly be, with the goal that they will encourage and motivate more students to want to stick with music for life. That's our real mission here. And so I often think about, well, what does it take? What are the key ingredients that we need to have in place as teachers to encourage students to want to play for life and to be to identify as musicians and to want to spend that time? What is it? And so I've been thinking about this more just recently, actually. Let me bring up my slides so you can see what I'm looking at here. For those of you in our community or have seen some of our blog posts or been to our webinars, you'll know that some of the factors that we often talk about to encourage students to want to continue their lessons and to hopefully play for a long time is obviously fun, modern, creative teaching. You guys are here at the Turbo Boost. I know they are things that you consider and implement in your teaching all the time. Giving them autonomy in music choice. We believe strongly at Top Music that student autonomy and student-led learning is crucial for student engagement in the long term. Being flexible in your lessons, having great rapport with your teacher, having fun and engaging activities to do. These are all things that I have often talked about in regard to helping students become sticky, to make them, to encourage them to want to practice and come to lessons and stick with music. But more recently, I've been wondering, is there actually another missing ingredient which I don't talk so much about? So what I want you to do now is have a think back, and I want you to answer the question in your head, what are the times you most vividly and fondly remember about your days as a music student? So go right back to whenever you started music, the age that you can remember, have memories of musical activities happening, particularly up through your teenage years, maybe into your early 20s. And I want you to think right now, I'm going to give you a moment to think about it. What are the things that you most vividly remember about your musical experience in those times? Have a think about it now. I want you to think of maybe two or three distinct moments in time that you can remember. So while you're having a bit of a think about that, I thought, why don't I share mine? So here we go. Yes, that is me next to my sister, and my brother is on my left, not at the piano, looking down at the keyboard. I don't know who the other kids are. I'm not even sure where this is, but this is me playing the left-hand part of a duet. I couldn't be more than 8 or 9, and I started playing at age 8. So I'm pretty impressed with my hand position and everything, I've got to say. And I was no prodigy, by the way. In fact, I wasn't the best student sometimes. But this is a memory that I have. Well, I don't remember the place playing with my sister and having my brother watch on and having that kind of interaction in our family was a memory that I had on a number of occasions. Here's another, this is a very strong memory in my mind. So every Christmas, Christmas Eve, when I was young, my parents used to go to a big dinner party. They'd leave us at home and they would go off to this massive, like, 20-person dinner party, big host would cook, all that kind of stuff. Guess what they would do after dinner on Christmas Eve? They'd sing carols. I love carols. I'm really sad that carols aren't really sung very much by kids anymore. But I was once, on one occasion, asked if I could fill in and play the music. And I guess here I was probably 13, 14, and I loved it. I distinctly remember it. I did it for 2 or 3 years, and then they eventually didn't do the dinner parties anymore. But I so clearly remember struggling my way through these carols and bopping out the chords and just kind of keeping up with everyone. That is a strong memory for me. Here's another memory. This is me in year 12 at my school accompanying my entire school choir. The teacher that would normally accompany suddenly couldn't do it, and I was actually in the best position to fill in. And the director of music knew that I was pretty good at sight reading and would be able to accompany, and bang, here I am. I remember, in fact, years before this in the National Boys Choir, I don't have a photo of this, but I didn't really enjoy the singing as much as sitting next to the accompanist and seeing and learning what he was doing. It had always been something fascinating for me. And here I was then accompanying my entire school choir. Here's another picture of me smiling in amongst some other people. This was at another concert where I was being the accompanist for people singing on a stage. It was actually a kind of celebration of the destruction of our old school hall. Actually, it was a wake effectively, but it was great. Yet again, another memory. And then I got into conducting musicals and being musical director of stage musicals run by schools and theatre companies and things. And so this is me in 2000 doing vocal warm-ups before kids went on stage to sing. And finally, here's me conducting an orchestra for a performance of the, what was it? I think it was The Wizard of Oz in outside of Melbourne. And here I was about 19, I think. And so these are some of those super vivid memories that I have of my music making. So what was on your list? I'd love to know. Now, if this was a live event, I would ask you to put it in the chat. I don't know if that's possible, but feel free to put your memories or just one of them in the chat if that's something that you can do. Maybe you had different ones to me. Maybe you could remember the rock concerts that you went to with your friends or even your parents when you were younger or something. Maybe an incredible music recital. Perhaps you are involved in church. It's a church service or a concert or a church camp. I remember playing music for a number of services when I was younger at my church. So that's you know, more clear memories. So what was on your list? Would love to know. Or going and singing a musical. Might be a professional one, might be an amateur one in your area. So my question to you, and I wonder if this is going to be the same for you, but I ask myself, what is the common factor? What is the thing that is common to all of these situations? I wonder if you can guess. Looking back over all of my memories that I brought back, what's the common factor? Well, cue the cheesy stock image. It's the social interaction. It's playing with other people. Every single one of my memories is of playing with other people. I have zero memories of being stuck in a practice room playing on my own or even performing a recital or a concert on my own. It wasn't about that for me, although it may be for you and for some of your students. But really, what was important was the social aspect. And why is this crucial? Well, of course, we're social beings. We love being together. We're made to share experiences with other people. it's more fun, isn't it? And that's why group lessons, for those of you who might be teaching group lessons, can be so much more socially cohesive and sticky for students because they have that social interaction. They can hang out with their mates and friends. It builds confidence because you're perhaps performing for other people, or you've got to be prepared to perform for other people. And that gives you a little bit more accountability too. So, you know, before some of those events, I had to practice pretty hard because I wasn't going to let down the people who were counting on me to perform and accompany. Whereas, you know, in your own recital, it's pretty easy to go, oh, well, I don't need to practice today. I'll do it another time. I guess the next question is, well, what's the challenge? Why is this harder today than it perhaps was when I was a child? And maybe it's harder than it was when you were a children. And I think it comes down to a few things. One of them is there literally seem to be fewer musical opportunities for student engagement these days outside of school. School provides certainly, well, although even school music education is sometimes, you know, dwindling in some places, and you know, the first thing that budget people have to cut is music programs. But on the whole, there are opportunities in schools. But outside of school, what have we got? We've got church, if you're a church-going family, but that's becoming rarer. No carols, coming back to my carols. Very few kids sing and learn carols anymore. We've got a pandemic, of course. That didn't help the last 2 or 3 years, did it? We've got less time because families are more busy, kids are overscheduled. So back when I was doing these things, I was able to spend the time after school doing what I wanted, really, and on weekends, apart from maybe a bit of sport. But now, of course, so many parents feel that it's important to just schedule afternoon activities galore. And so these opportunities to just make music with other people, they're hard to find these days. So the question is, what can we do? So what I want to do is challenge you to look beyond, in particular, the end of year recital idea. It's not going to suit every student to stand up, or even mid-year, but stand up and play an instrument in front of people. It just isn't fun for a lot of kids. And in fact, it's quite scary for a lot of kids, as you'll know, because no doubt you will have all had pushback from some students at some stage. And you've got to make that decision as a teacher. Do you force them to, or do you just go, no, that's okay? I would say, no, that's okay, because there are other potential ways that they could show what they've been learning. Building pathways for group playing. So I'm going to give you some specific ideas in a moment about ways to get people playing in groups and together. Could you encourage them to make a garage band? I was in a garage band for a while at university. It was really bad, but it was fun. It was me, a drummer, and a guitarist. No, I was playing drums. There's a drum. it wasn't even on my primary instrument. I was playing drums, and there was another keyboardist and the guitar. Oh, I can't even remember, but I do. I can picture these moments in someone's garage playing in a band. Can we encourage them to find some friends that play similar complementary instruments? And a big one, encourage all your students to join school bands, choirs, and orchestras. Now, if they're already playing a wind instrument or a string instrument, they're probably already in those things. But if they're a pianist, pianists make amazing percussionists. They tend to have relatively good rhythm, and they can play all the different mallet percussions, the xylophones, glockenspiels, marimbas, and vibraphones. So encourage them to get involved in school orchestras and bands and choirs. And of course, if you want to, I know it doesn't suit everyone, but if you want to, you can consider group pairs and buddies lessons. Even if you just work on a little crossover period of 15 minutes, you have two kids, 15 minutes, they cross over, they do some duet work together. So let's go through, I guess, the simplest way to begin this. If you're not really conscious about giving your students social opportunities to play music together, here's where you can start. The simplest way is playing with a backing track. Now, you're probably going, well, that doesn't involve another person, and you're right, but it's a step in the right direction, and it's a way to prepare students for playing with another person, so they're going to have to keep in time, etc. So backing tracks is a simple, easy win that still doesn't involve other people, but is starting to get that feel. Playing duets. I would imagine that 99% of you, probably 100% of you, play duets with your beginner students. So that's great. But also consider about pairing students with other students. Even if they're at different levels, they can do different hands, different parts, all that kind of stuff. Encourage students to try accompanying singers and instruments. I think if I could nail down the one most important factor that kept me playing music and enjoying music for my entire life, it's been accompanying singers. I've always enjoyed doing it. I have really done it since I was very young, really. And it has been the experience, that connection that you get playing and making music with other people has been a feature of my entire life. To the point where I have a friend across the other side of the country, whenever I visit, we get out our songbooks. She even made me songbooks that we can sing. She sings, I play, and we have a glass of wine, and it's such a wonderful connection. So trying to find moments where your students, particularly if they're pianists, can accompany other instrumentalists or vocalists would be great, or even themselves, but that's still not social. And group performance opportunities. So you may have read a while ago, I did a pop showcase with my students. So for the students learning pop music, we got them together with a band, bass, drums, guitar. They were professionals. They're actually teachers at my school, and they all got to perform with the rhythm section. It was super cool. We called it the pop piano jam sesh. And I had 5 students. I performed as well. I thought that would be kind of fun. And here is one of our rehearsals. So the 3 gentlemen at the back are teachers of guitar, bass, and drums. And Will here is on the piano, and he sang Piano Man. I played harmonica. It was such a great experience, and particularly relevant for those students who aren't doing classical. Maybe they are playing classical music, but they don't find it something that really inspires them. Maybe they don't have to perform the classical music at a recital. Maybe they could do something popular like this. And if you're interested in that, I do have a blog post about it. You could go on Google, just type Top Music Pop Piano Recital. I'm sure you'll be able to find this article or search for it on our website. So don't forget also to look for opportunities to encourage your students and their parents to listen to music together. So this idea of social listening, I think, is important too. And again, it doesn't happen enough because when I was a kid, no one had earphones and no one had phones. So we listened to music out loud. And so I love a lot of the music my dad was listening to when I was a kid. I still listen to it. It's kind of funny. Kids so much these days don't do that so much. They're much more influenced by their peers, put the headphones in, listen to rap and whatever else it is. So simple idea is going to a concert, doesn't have to be classical, could be a rock concert, under 18 concert, whatever it is, or a recital. In the car is great because you've got a captive audience. If your kids get in the car and put headphones in, I say, I'm sorry, I'm not an Uber driver. Take your headphones out. We're either going to talk or we can listen to some music. Doing chores or activities. So recently my son wanted to paint one of the walls of his room. So we could put some music on and do it together. Easy way to have some listening together. And we also have a tradition in our family that Sunday breakfast is really late. I normally cook up a cooked breakfast, and we put on Friday night is music night from the BBC. Just stream it live, get a whole lot of different music. It's all performed live. And it's funny, we've been doing this for 3 years. The kids now, when the theme song comes on, they're kind of like, oh, but they do secretly like it. So there's another thing that you could do. Other resources for this, Simon Rushby is an incredible music educator based in England. He has this blog. You can go to simonrushby.com, and he has under his blog, Listen Every Day. He's got these daily listening activities for a whole variety of different types of music, modern, classical, musicals, you name it. There's some information about it, and then a link. You can just click the YouTube and have a listen in the background. Another person who we work with is Mr. Henry's Music World. This guy is so good. If you haven't checked out his raps, I don't know if you can see them here. The A note rap, right, down the bottom. He's got this series of raps. People absolutely love them. They're used mainly in classrooms, but again, you could do some of this with or encourage your parents to explore some of these with their students. And finally, most of you will know David Williams's marvelous musical podcast. This is great storytelling around the background of music. It's an absolute winner. Kids of all ages, I find, really enjoy that. So more ideas or places you could go. I recorded a podcast way back in episode 34 with Laura Kaha. She's a Sydney-based teacher here in Australia who's doing great things. And this podcast was about building community. So you can feel free to go and check that out. You could run weekend or holiday events or workshops if you don't have the time in your lesson to change things up too much. You could run masterclasses where students at least get to hear each other performing and get feedback on things. Summer camps, many of you in America do those. Even group theory classes. It's not music making as such, although music theory should be musical, but you're still doing musical things with other people, and I think that's what's crucial. So I've got a free 2-page handy PDF for implementing some of these changes in your studio. If you agree with some of the things I've been saying but didn't have time to write it all down, grab this freebie and you can just put it next to your instrument or piano or whatever it is and maybe refer to it and just think about how you could implement one of these ideas with one of your students. So you can go to topmusic.co/turbo. You'll be able to find the link to that. And yeah, as I say, just one thing with one student. So let's say Charlotte's coming in for her lesson. Talk to her about, has she joined the choir at school or is she in a band or is there a space for a percussionist in the orchestra? That's the kind of thing that I would do. My conclusion, my question for you is, what can you do to encourage more musical social interaction in your studio? And if you're predominantly an independent teacher teaching one-on-one lessons, then this is really, really, a really, really important question for you for this year, in my opinion. Would love to know what you think about this. So please feel free to provide feedback if you'd like to find out more about what I do at Top Music and the opportunities that we have for teachers, then just head over to topmusic.co. So what do you think? Do you agree with my belief around the importance of community and community connection and music making together? And how did that look in your own learning? I'd love to know. When you look back on some of the most pivotal moments and the things that you can remember most about your own musical journey, are they things to do with you being alone or are they things to do with you being in groups? And I want that to be instructive for you as you build experiences for your studio and your students. Can you make those same kinds of opportunities come to life for your current students? Now that the pandemic is wrapping up, we hope, this is a great opportunity now that we can do more and more things together and in person. So I hope this has been helpful for you and given you some ideas. Next week on the podcast, we're going to be inviting you to something very special. Each week, our Top Music Pro members get the chance to join a free power hour, one of three at different time zones around the world on different days. And the power hours are purely there to work as a group, be accountable for getting things done, and to check things off your list. And these have been incredibly popular for our members. So much so, I wanted to offer this to all of our podcast listeners. So whether you're a member or not, next week on the podcast, you're going to be finding out how the week after that episode airs, you're going to be able to join one of these power hours totally free to get an experience of what they're all about. I'm going to tell you more about them next week. Until next time, I'm Tim Topham and you've been listening to The Topcast. Speak to you then. For more information about this episode and to find out how to enhance your own teaching, visit topmusic.co. You'll find everything you need for your studio, from lesson plans to cheat sheets, quick win teaching ideas and guides on how to build your teaching business. Plus, you'll be connected to a global community of the world's top music teachers. And when you're ready, join hundreds of other teachers around the world by becoming a Top Music Pro member and get access to all our bonus content and flagship courses. And don't forget to follow topmusic.co on social media and subscribe to this podcast wherever you listen to it. That's all for today. We'll see you in the studio.